Sir, the possibility of successfully navigating an asteroid field is approximately 3,720 to 1.
Never tell me the odds.
I'm Pete Mitchell. He's Peyton Jones. And this is the Church Planner Podcast.
My name is Chesley Lunde. I am the co-founder of Digital Church Network. Why would a church guy be talking at innovation, digital, and business, a summit like this? Well, the reality is the religious world is being disrupted by all of you wonderful people. And so thank you. Thank you very much. No, I'm really excited to talk about what's going on. We have at Digital Church Network been working with over 600 leaders from all over the globe in 12 different countries that are using digital technology that maybe some of you guys have created to reach more people for their faith. And so I want you to think of this as an interdisciplinary study, maybe a parable to get some inspiration for innovation that you guys are using in your fields. And so that guy right there looks like George Clooney. So really excited about that. At least I like to think so in my dreams. But there is a wise man. His name is Erwin McManus. He's a futurist and a pastor. And he says, to be innovative in the church world, you only need to clearly see the present. That's how wonderful we are at changing. And the reality is, as churches, the reason why we are slow to change is because, especially for the Western model of church in Christianity, that model was designed 1,700 years ago. The first 300 years of Christianity was decentralized, and it was kind of disrupted from the Jewish system with Jesus. They had a temple system that was built around a centralized paradigm called a temple. And everything they did was around that temple. And when Jesus came, he said, in the future, people won't worship from animal sacrifices and a temple system, but they'll worship in spirit and in truth. And for 300 years after Jesus died, and you know, my faith says he resurrected and went to heaven. You may not believe that. That's okay. But what happened was a huge innovation in the way man related to God. Within 70 years, they stopped temple sacrifices for the Jewish system, never to return again. And most of the world over a period of 300 to 400 years stopped doing it altogether, except for some secluded areas in the world. And over those 400 years, you've seen a massive decentralization underground movement of people that said, we relate to God in this way. And yet they were persecuted and killed for their beliefs often, so they stayed hidden. And then along came this man named Constantine, and he was the emperor of Rome, and decided, hey, my mother loves Jesus, and I need to win a war, so I'm going to love Jesus too. And I'm going to legalize Christianity. Now, whether he was authentic in that belief or he saw a political advantage, that's a different talk for a different day. But what happened is it allowed Christianity and people that were Christians in hiding to come out to the surface. And we had the first major shift in Christian religion at that point. And it was all about culture. When Christians came out of hiding, they decided they were going to put their stamp on culture. And what they did was they city planned and they built entire communities around the centralized worship of their way of viewing God. And so we see ancient, you know, towns from the Middle Ages or Middle Ages and earlier, where the entire city is built around a circle, and the highest point in that city is the steeple of the church. And they did that so that way, no matter where you were at in eye distance, you could see where you needed to head. which was the centralized platform that was called a church. And so they did this for a reason. They did this because the people that they were serving at that time were farmers, and then they were illiterate. So they needed a place within walking or riding distance to come and commune with each other. So a church service, I know some of you who do go to church, you think an hour of me talking is too long. Well, they would be in church for hours, like 5, 6, 7 hours on a Sunday. And they did this for a very good reason. I have a half hour. He reminded me. Yeah. He's like, you have a half hour. Well, let's be honest. I don't even have a half hour. I've got 23 minutes and 13 seconds. And so what ends up happening is they would hang out all day, and then they would sit and they would listen to the reading of the word, and they would do that because they couldn't read. And that was needed. It was amazing. It actually brought people together that they had never been brought together before. It created a community structure. It created the arts at the beginning. These buildings are beautiful. So we saw a flourishing of human existence when they began to come out and shift towards culture creation. But over time, like everything else, it gets corrupted and they forget the reason why, the pure motivations they started with, and politics and religion got in bed together and created what? A monster. And fast forward, let's see, that was 1700 years ago. So fast forward 1200 years later, and you get this college professor in Germany that is seeing all the corruption in the church at that point and said, something's got to change. Something's got to change. And he writes a list of 95 things he would like to talk to his archbishop about and maybe get a public debate so that he can try to change the stuff. The reality is that even though this man was writing, he was doing something far more innovative than he even imagined. You see, for the 1700 years that we have of Christian history, the reality is you have these farmers that are coming in. They had heard one message, and it was the message of their priest or their friar or their abbot. It was not the message of the confluence of voices in the Catholic Church at that time. It was whatever they could ride or walk to. And so here this man, Martin Luther, is writing these 95 theses, and he does something pretty interesting. Up until this point, Gutenberg had built the printing press, except the universities used it as a theoretical academic device, and they only wrote in Latin. Interesting. If you're in Germany, you don't know Latin. You don't even know how to read. And so here he is writing, and he gets this idea, what if I printed these things on a one-pager so that it'd be easy to read? And what if I used it in modern-day language, which just happened to be German where he was at? And what ended up happening, he posted that thing onto the door as an invitation for debate. It got out of hand. It became a social movement. And because it was short and readable, and because people already had problems with the church at that point, they would read it when they were drunk in a tavern at night towards everybody else in the group. And they're like, yeah, let's storm the gates of, you know, the Vatican, like the Pope is really going to fight you. But hey, so here they are. They're listening to these outlandish, like, challenges to the church. And it was this movement that created a whole new way of thinking. But it wasn't just the idea. See, it was the invention coupled with the idea that made the innovation. It was that social moment for Martin Luther to say, I'm going to take what I know, which is this invention, and I'm actually going to add some things that it wasn't regularly intended for its use to create something totally new. And in that moment, he didn't know this because he was religious, but he created the literary market and he created the modern day PR. And so what ended up happening is the second shift in religious history happened. And that was a decentralization of theology. So oftentimes people ask why there are so many denominations, because of that little contraption right there. Because people were now able to freely spread quickly and at scale their ideas about God and how he related to the world. That was the point of all of this. And so now it wasn't that these guys in the past hadn't had those ideas before. Usually it was one, and because of the limited reach of their ideas, because they didn't have something that would go to spread to scale, the church at that point could tamp it down pretty easily. But this time, because of Martin Luther's idea coupled with an invention, he was able to spread. And so that's how the Protestant Reformation came to be. And yet, you know what didn't get touched? Our buildings. The only thing that shifted in the way people related to God on a Sunday morning was that the pulpit that people would listen to moved to the center. Because in the Protestant Reformation, Martin thought it was not some man that was the end-all be-all. It was the centrality of hearing the word of God. And so he thought preaching would be the central focus of the church's endeavors. And for 500 years, that hasn't changed. Here we are now, 500 years later, and we are completely different. You see, we used to go to platforms, but now we're literate. Now we're going to post-literism. We used to go to platforms, but now platforms come to us. And so here we are in a world that is vastly different than when Martin Luther decided to move the pulpit. And in fact, because of this world, content has been made a commodity. Well, what happens when content is now a commodity and community is now a commodity with Web 2.0? Well, the very existence of the church is in danger, because for 1700 years, that has been their stated value proposition: community and content. What happens when that goes away? Well, that happens. The average churchgoer attends less than once per month. That's interesting. In 2016, as a pastor, I was 30 years old. I was sitting in with 45 other pastors. I was the youngest by 25 years. And their topic was this: how do we reach millennials? And for 45 minutes, they deliberated on how they were going to reach millennials without asking the token millennial in the room. And they finally got to me and like, what do you think? How do we reach more of your friends and people like you? And I said, you know what I keep thinking? I've been trying to invite my friends to church, and I preach, and they're my friends, and they still don't come to mine. But I'm like, what if the church didn't have a building? And then they laughed and said, you're ridiculous. That's never going to happen. Never going to happen until, COVID. And now we find ourselves after 2020. With this conundrum right here, that the church is designed for a world that no longer exists. And that's a scary place to be. Because the truth is that the world has actually ramped up their willingness to discuss spiritual ideas. Now, it may not be the spiritual ideas that I hold, but we love to dialogue. You've heard the three topics you're not allowed to talk about. Well, millennials and Gen Z don't know that rule. They talk about politics, sex, and religion all day long. That's what you do on social media, right? Especially on TikTok. And yet the church answers questions that nobody asks. Asks you to go to a building that nobody wants to go to. especially when you can get the content online. While, and you know, if you put a podcast up, and most church leaders are like, "What's a podcast?" But I can listen to it on my way to my drive to work. The church is designed for a world that no longer exists. So my question at the Digital Church Network and what my team has been doing is like answering this question: what would it look like if Jesus had the internet? Now, that's a euphemism. You could put that as Muhammad or anybody else. But the reality is, how do we handle a world that relates to God with different methodology than we're used to? What happens when your industry completely becomes archaic overnight? Because the truth is, we were being disrupted before the pandemic, but we could ignore it. But when the pandemic happened, 65% of churches didn't even have an online presence to be able to talk to their constituents. They didn't realize that the power of Web 2.0 was the ability to connect and commune with people, whether you were in the geographical area or not. But these guys are your consumers. They're the ones that are buying your products. Most of them begrudgingly, because they still have to move with the future, even though they'd rather go back to the past. Jesus said something really interesting as a religious disruptor. He said that you can't pour new wine into old wineskins. He said, because if you do, the new wine and the old wine, when it mixes and the new wine ferments, the wineskin will burst because it's already stretched as much as it can go. And you'll lose both the old wine and the new wine. For nobody that has tasted the old wine ever wants to go and taste something new. As innovators, Jesus has real good advice from the first century to us in the 21st century. Don't try to shove something new down somebody else's throat that wants something old. They'll reject it every time. And so we've got to build something new for churches. We've got to find a new market. That is the innovator's dilemma with Clayton Christensen. Is like, how do we change knowing we need to get younger when all the old people pay all of our bills? That is the quintessential question we have in the church world right now. It ain't about Jesus and love and faith and hope. No, it's about the money, man. And so we've got to figure it out. So how do we do that? Well, Digital Church Network is a global community of digital church leaders who are disrupting institutional religion. We're not doing that because we're innovative. We're doing that because you guys said that we have to do it, because you created technology that allows the sovereignty of an individual to reign supreme. Because of Web 2.0 and Web 3.0 technologies, I don't even get into Web 3.0 with churches because their eyes glaze over. But the reality is, we're moving from community to immersion and presence. And how do we deal with that? The third shift in the church right now is a digital reformation. So we went from the Protestant Reformation that was all about theological decentralization. We had the first shift with Constantine, which was cultural centralization. Today, it's about ecclesiological decentralization. What does that mean? Ecclesiology is a very fancy word for what makes a church a church. And that is the conversations we are having in our world. Because what digital technology has done is said, you don't have to be present to be together. You don't. You can be connected with somebody a world away. You don't have to listen to a guy on a stage give his opinion about a Bible that nobody reads except for him. But maybe if you put it in a visual or audio form, people might formulate their own opinions about it and share their opinions more freely with others. So it's not about the professional anymore. They've been commoditized. And so what would it look like if Jesus owned the internet? Well, my friends and I have been working on that. We're in the metaverse, and what we're realizing is there's three main points to what we're seeing. We're seeing the first one, that Jesus would leave the building. In fact, Jesus left the building 2,000 years ago when he left the temple system. And now what we're finding is that the coolest things that are happening in the church world are happening in the metaverse. They're happening on social media. They are happening places like TikTok and even just good old websites with email funnels. That's what's actually growing. And we're finding that people that would never step foot in a building are asking real engaging questions about life and how to relate to God and other spiritual questions. And so what we're finding is the best place to actually do ministry is not in a church with people that are already persuaded, but it's out there in the streets where people are actually asking. And so that's the first shift. The second shift is he actually would empower people. You actually see this. There's a story in scripture where Jesus actually puts everybody, organizes his followers, 70 of them, and matches them two by two, and then sends them out. And this is Luke 10, for those of you that like to read the Bible, sends them out into the cities he's about to go to. And when he does, they come back, they share all their stories, they celebrate, and they thought, wow, this is amazing. People actually were like, hey, this is awesome. What he did was he actually empowered them with his authority and gave them responsibility and said, go. Well, in a Web 3.0 world, guess what? Churches and businesses alike have to empower their people. They will not work for you. They are free agents. They will work with you, especially Gen Z and millennials. They are about mission and cause. They are about making the world a better place. They are about how will you help me be everything that God has designed me to be? And churches, unfortunately, believe it or not, are not about development. They're about the event. They're about the Sunday morning service because it comes every week. And you may have a product that your business is, it's about the product. Well, in our business, the product has shifted from an event to a development process. And the only way for us to have a good development process is if it leads somewhere. Well, where would it lead as a religious institution? It leads to personal transformation. So our product is people development, not an event on a Sunday. And it'll shift everything we do because the outcome is different. If I want to put on really loud music that nobody sings to because it's weird to sing in public, then you go to the event on Sunday. But if you really want to change people's lives, you develop people. That's the outcome we're looking for. So the model has to shift. And my friends have been doing it. They've been doing it on the metaverse. They've been realizing like email marketing funnels can actually work for church leaders. Who knew? Because it's worked for the business for 20 plus years. So we're learning business concepts through Web 2.0 technologies. And I think later on, Web 3.0 technologies, where we actually can have real conversations and we can build a community. And that would be the last thing. Jesus would create a community and not a crowd. So often in our space, we're looking to become famous because we can speak very well. And like me, you look like George Clooney. So people love to follow George Clooney. At least I would. He would create a community. Well, what does a community look like? In the decentralized world, a community is making sure that I have experiences with you and you know that I care about you. We are experimenting with DAOs. Church as a DAO. We have a friend that's a missionary in El Salvador that went there and said, how do I tangibly make this place a better place? And what they did was they took cryptocurrency, decoupled their actual physical community away from the currency from El Salvador, got all the community leaders and the business leaders to agree that they would use crypto as their main form of trading and currency, and have boosted people out of poverty, because as volatile as cryptocurrency is not nearly as volatile as corrupt politicians' pieces of paper are. And so we are really making a world a better place by using technology to make people better, by creating communities that people know they're cared for and they're loved. So what can you do here? Well, you can realize that the church is in a tumultuous situation and that they're being disrupted because they sat on their butts and they did nothing when the culture shifted and changed. and you have an innovation, you have innovations in your companies, but you also have processes and you also have products that quite honestly probably need to change some of them. And if you don't, you can use us as a cautionary tale to know where you will be if you don't try something new.